Hello and welcome to season 5 of Canine Hoopers World, the podcast. Enjoy. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Canine Hoopers World, the podcast. Now, first time podcast guest as well. This is very exciting. I'm going to let her do the intro. But Laura, how are you? Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Yes, no, I'm absolutely fine. Thank you. It's a lovely sunny day here in Scotland. So, no, good.
Excellent. So, Laura, you are an IMDT trainer.
Yep.
So you are part of one of the organisations I'm also part of. How long have you been training?
I've been doing dog training now for about 15 odd years. So quite a while.
Yeah, you're one of our seasoned, weathered ones.
Yes. yeah.
And you recently relocated, didn't you?
We did, yes. Last June, we moved up to Scotland from Kent. So a bit of a travel distance, but...
So you were like down south where it was warm and sunny, and you've moved to Scotland. Where, to be fair, though, beautiful scenery.
Beautiful city. And also, you see, what you can get for your money up here is amazing. I mean, we've now got a property. We've got 9 acres of woodland. I've got my own training barn. Oh. Whereas before, we were in the middle of a village without any of that. And I was kind of looking for
a venue. I don't even think that exists in Kent, really.
No, it doesn't. So no.
I get the move north. I totally understand and can, yeah. I'm yeah. Like, hey, I want woodland and training venues and a little bit down
the line. I mean, before I was teaching outside, whereas now, I mean, we're in the process of doing up the barn here, but I'm going to have my own wood burner in there. So it'd be nice and cosy for training.
Oh, my goodness. Amazing. It sounds absolutely brilliant. So you have written a book.
I have, yes.
Do you want to tell us about that?
So I wrote a book last year called The Vet Says Rest, which is all about helping owners when they've got a dog on restricted exercise. But equally, it's all about preparing owners because you never know when your dog's going to get injured or need an operation. And I'll say I'm currently working with a bull mastiff at the moment, and she's on 12 weeks crate rest following surgery on her leg. So it's just all about providing the resources for these people. And that was kind of my inspiration for the book. Yeah. So quite a few years ago, I was just a bog standard pet trainer. And I did a lot of work with a 6-month-old German shepherd that broke his leg playing ball in the garden.
Oh.
And there were so many problems, and the recovery was so long for that dog, mm-hmm. because they just could not keep him calm in the crate. He was a young, very intelligent breed that wanted to be doing stuff.
The thought of 6-month-old dodge in a crate is not fun. No.
I mean, I'd say, Ted was only 6 months old at the time.
Oh.
And I mean, equally, over the years of training, I've had a number of dogs, you know, owners that have come to me with their dog with various problems. I helped a Labrador that, again, got a leg stuck in a car door, resulting in broken bones.
Oh, that's emotional. Wow, that would be. But this is the thing, isn't it? Because we talk about training and we quite often talk about husbandry with clients. But one of the things I'm really passionate about, obviously, is muzzle training. You know, my own dog wears a muzzle and stuff. But people are like, oh, well, my dog's fine. Why do I need to muzzle train it? And it's like, just in case.
Yes.
Just in case.
Yeah.
If that dog lives its whole life never having to wear a muzzle, that's cool. But obviously now with laws changing in various countries about dogs needing to be muzzled, stuff like that, some dogs are now having to be muzzled due to law. But, you know, I'd muzzle Dodge because he makes bad life choices. It's being prepared, isn't it? And I think that was sort of what you wanted to do with...
Definitely, yeah. I mean, with the muzzle training, my best story is I used to have a little Jack Russell and he was involved in an accident. And when it came to removing his stitches, he wouldn't let the vet anywhere near the wound because obviously it was sore, it was painful at the time. So again, we just stuck a muzzle on him. He was quite happy wearing it because I'd got him used to it. Stuck a muzzle on, vet removed the stitches, no problem. But it was almost getting to the stage where they'd had to knock him out to have the stitches taken out for the vet safety.
Well, but also for his safety as well. And we don't want dogs ending up with bite history. And we have to understand that when they are in pain, they
They
are
will
going
bite.
out of character. And, you know, I'm not being funny. If I'm hurting, I mean, my husband's injured at the moment, and you've just kindly asked him how he is. And the answer was angry because he's fed up because he can't move so much and he's limited in
No.
what he can do and all the rest of it. I think it's very easy for us to just be complacent and go, oh, yeah, well, it won't happen to me. You know,
No, but it
having a
does.
broken husband, he wasn't planning on getting injured at work, but he has. And now he's got to wear a cast for 3 weeks. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, one of the dogs I worked with was a little dachshund, and he literally damaged his back jumping off the sofa.
Very common injury in Datsies, actually. And stares is the other one
But it wasn't
because.
even a particularly active dog, you know. Complete freak accident one evening. And again, it's very common in the breed. But she would have been the first person to say, oh, it never happened to Basil, but it did.
Yeah. So, first of all, let's go into the book. So, obviously, you've given us kind of a lovely overview of what the book's about. But for people that might be thinking, oh, well, my dog's fine. It's not at the vet's. Why do they need the book?
I'll say a lot of it is all about being prepared. So a lot of our household pets are quite, you know, they're allowed on the sofa, they're allowed on the bed, they're so often they sleep with their owner at night. They get lots of freedom, which is absolutely fine, nothing wrong with all of that. But if you end up with a dog that's suddenly got to be confined, is not allowed to be jumping on the sofa, it's a major issue. And these dogs don't understand, they're in pain, they're feeling uncomfortable because of whatever the vet has suggested. And then all of a sudden they're confined sometimes to a crate. And if you're not, your dog's not used to being in a crate, suddenly being in a crate when they're feeling frustrated, angry, in pain is the worst thing possible.
I mean, the previous episode I was talking with Diane, and her dog was badly injured before she got him as a rescue. And he now has trouble with his paws, and there are times where she needs him to rest. And because he's a bull breed, he's like, yeah, I'm fine. And you're like, no, sir, you are not fine. He's like, ah, it's just fine. And she's like, no, you're not. I know sometimes with Dodge, if he's having a stiff day, I have to kind of go, mate, on your bed, lay down, chill out. We're not training today. You're
No.
sore. He still wants to work. He still wants to do. And I think for all dogs, it can be difficult, but for those that have more worky dogs, it is going to be really tricky, isn't it?
You know, you've got the kind of athletes like the agility dogs or the Hooper's dogs, and they're the ones that possibly will get injured as part of their sport. And they're the worst type that to suddenly go from, you know, having this really good hobby that keeps their brain entertained, keeps their body going and quite happy, and then all of a sudden they're on rest with a broken leg. It's probably similar to what your husband's going through at the moment.
He's grand. But at least with humans, you can explain why things have to be rested, why you're not allowed to use your arm at the moment. You have to be careful. You can't do this. You can't do that. Whereas the dog suddenly goes, well, hang on a minute. Like, also, the other thing I think people don't get their dog used to, because unless they need to have it on, they may not ever train them, is having like a cone or an inflatable cone.
No, definitely not. Have you ever tried a cone on?
I'm gonna say no.
Try one on. It's something I get a lot of people to do, and it actually changes everything. Because it's all echoey, you can't see properly, you've got this big thing on your head. Try it on, it's worth a go.
I actually, that's interesting because obviously, yes, it's gonna sort of affect what they're seeing, but I hadn't thought about the audio side of it.
It's massive for the audio.
And obviously, dogs' ears are much more sensitive than human ears anyway. Their hearing is better than ours. So, yeah, that must be really weird for them.
Really weird. And then imagine that you're feeling a bit unsettled, stressed, in pain, etc. And then you have this big thing on your head. Then you're not allowed to sleep on your owner's bed that you sleep there every night. You're not allowed on the sofa. Everybody's kind of cautious around you, and you end up with a very stressed dog.
Although, actually, And I hate it being called the cone of shame as well, because it's not the cone of
Yes.
shame. Like,
No.
let's change the narrative. When they have their lampshade on, so Munchkin, one of our previous dogs, she had several foot injuries from running through stuff far too quickly and slicing
Oh,
pads
yeah.
off stuff. And she was a witch for getting bandages off, honestly.
Yeah.
I will sing my own praises now. I am a whiz at a paw bandage, because
Brilliant.
there were days where I would have to do three dressings because she just pulled them off. Tried
Yeah.
the no chew bag, like you named it, we tried it, and it got to the point where she would have to have the bust collar on, so the cone and an inflatable collar
Oh,
on,
yeah.
so she couldn't get to the paw. But obviously it was a bit itchy, a bit uncomfortable. You got this weird boot thing on, like.
Yeah.
So we actually, that was the point when she was allowed to sleep on the bed, because if she went to go and chew or nuzz it, one of us would wake up and be like, wait, leave it alone. Because I'm in a multi-dog household. So yes, the dogs are, and Minx does get in the bed because she's the elder now and she gets her murder. Dodge comes up for a bit of a cuddle, but then gets off himself. But when we had four or five dogs, they weren't sleeping on the bed because it was
No.
too many dogs. It was
Yeah,
too much. The rules have changed now. The numbers have changed a bit, but it is tricky, is it? When you've got a dog that's used to, as you say, getting on the sofa or whatever. Like, I think Minx would find resting a lot harder than dodging ways, because he's so big. He waits to be invited onto,
yes.
rather than, whereas she just demands that she is brought up immediately because obviously she's royalty. So I think she would find it harder when I think of it that way. So what can people expect, like in the books? Obviously there's going to be some prep stuff. What are some of the sort of tips that you give people about prepping for?
Well, so a lot of the prepping is all about kind of almost thinking of your daily routine. And in fact, funny enough, I wrote an email out to my lot this morning, all about almost looking for the triggers that happen during the day that give the sign to the dog that you're going for a walk. And almost changing these around a bit, because otherwise you have a lot of dogs that the owner gets up in the morning, has a cup of tea, then we go for a walk. And they've been doing that for years and years and years. And then all of a sudden, doggy's on rest. The minute that kettle goes on, that dog is waiting for their walk. That's almost the stress of the anticipation can cause a lot of problems. So what I'd almost encourage owners to do is sometimes mix things up a bit and not always do that morning walk. Sometimes spend that kind of half hour, whatever you've got in the morning. Go out, do a bit of training with your dog, do something fun with them, have a bit of you and them time. But it doesn't necessarily mean going for a run around the woods that they do every morning, because that's something that may have to stop in certain circumstances.
Obviously, some dogs do really thrive on routine. I mean, in terms of an exercise routine in my household, it's varied because obviously I'm teaching different days. Like, there's generally days of the week that they know we're going to be in the van for the day and we're going to be on an adventure, or there are other days where we're doing admin, whatever, or we're just having a day off of nothing. But also, like, if Dodge is competing, maybe Mink stays at home. Also, I let her decide if she wants to come out or not. I know that might sound silly, but as an elder dog, there are days where if it's a bit cold and wet, she goes,
No.
"You run out in that, are you lot mental?" Whereas other days, she goes, "Actually, I would like to come out now. Thank you very much." I would say the only real routine my guys have is that we get up and they are fed, and at 5:30 they have dinner. Like, you could pretty much set a clock to, yeah. If anyone ever needs to remember to take medication at a certain time of the day, when you take your medication, give
Feed your
dog,
dog.
cat, feed them a cookie, and I guarantee you will never forget your medication, because your
No.
animal will tell you that it is time for the cookies.
Definitely. Yep. Definitely.
So with, like, I mean, is your routines, do your guys have kind of more of a similar routines that get mixed
Well,
up, or
no.
are you
Again,
quite strict with?
yeah, no. I mean, interestingly enough, you see, I've got a young spaniel who has got a bite history, and he's quite a he ended up with me. It's probably the
You've
best
got
way.
one of those dogs. Okay.
Yes. He came to me, and then I couldn't rehome him for safety reasons, and he's been
You've
with
got a
me now for
second-hand one that's got some glitches.
definitely. he would love a routine. Is in if something happens twice, it happens at that time every day, according to him. So you literally cannot do things twice with him.
Oh.
So with him, I have to mix things up because I don't want to be stuck. And it'd be very easy to go, oh, I'll give them a good run around in the woods before it gets dark. But if I do that a couple of times on the trot, you can guarantee as it starts to get dark, he will be barking, wanting a walk.
Oh, wow.
And obviously, some days that's not convenient, but also I do like to mix it up in case there was ever a reason that, you know, he couldn't go out. So if he got injured or if the weather wasn't good or,
Or if you're under the weather as well,
well,
you know,
yes.
because,
Yeah.
you know, especially during the winter, there's so many colds and flus and COVID and all the other stuff going around that there are days where you're like, no, we are not leaving the house today.
No. I mean, again, last winter, I had a couple of owners that I did a lot of work with that broke their feet sliding over in the ice.
Yeah,
So,
that's a more common injury than people realize,
yes.
probably. So obviously, maybe not having a super strict routine, mix it up a little bit, even
Mix
if
it up
it's
a bit.
one day a week, you randomly do a bit of training or, you know, have a bit of a cuddle, have a bit of a game rather than just going for a walk.
Yeah.
What other sort of things?
I mean, something that I've always done with my dogs, I say I do tend to do it more after a walk, is they always have a period of isolation, either in a crate or we've got the utility room. Normally it's a time because they're filthy, muddy, they have been out for a walk, and it gives them the opportunity to dry off. But
Yeah.
equally, it gets them used to spending, they probably spend, you know, an hour or two in a crate every day.
Yeah.
And it just gets them used to almost associating the emotion of I go to a crate, I go to sleep.
Yeah.
And they know that they just chill out in a crate. I mean, also when I'm teaching, my Dalmatian will come with me and he just chills in a crate in the corner of a class, because he associates a crate with going to sleep.
Yeah, my guys associate being in the van with chilling. It's what
Chilling,
we
yeah.
go in the van and nothing happens. Outside the
No.
van, fun stuff. Inside the van, nothing. Just for sleepings.
Yeah,
Yeah.
mine do the same with the van, but it's building up that association for dogs again. If they were on rest, I could get crates out, and my dogs would be quite happy just chilling out in crates.
Yeah, and I think crates are a bit of a, they can be a bit of a sort of a sticky subject sometimes because
Definitely.
obviously, in some countries, crating your dog is illegal.
Yeah.
That, and I understand why, but for me, all dogs should be comfortable being in a crate for small periods of time because if they ever have to go into the vet when they're traveling, you know, they're going to be safer in a crate than just loose in the car.
Definitely.
But also, if things do happen and they have got an injury. If that dog has never ever been in a crate, and it could just be routine ops, you know, post spay, post
Yeah,
neuter.
definitely.
Like if they've never experienced any being in a crate as a positive, that is suddenly a very, very big negative, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, also, it's not just the crate, it's the fact that, you know, a lot of dogs are just free running in the house. They're always where the action is.
Yeah.
Whereas again, if they're on rest, they may have to be restricted. So there may be something going on in a different room and they're not there. And a lot of
Yeah.
dogs just can't cope with being separate from the family or whatever is going on in the house.
Yeah. Even, you know, like we've got a big barrier gate that goes across the bottom of the hallway so that if I don't want the dogs upstairs, you know, if I, for heaven forbid, want to have half an hour without the dogs. You know, call yourself a dog trainer. Like, what is this you're talking about? You know, I can quite happily, guys, stay down there and I can go upstairs, get ready, do whatever, have a bath. Like, and I'm not worried about them because I know they'll be asleep. You know, we've got cameras, and if I'm out in the day, they're, I mean, now we're podcasting, I've got two dogs fast asleep. It's fine. What would be your kind of tips to people that have said, I don't really like these crate things, you know, like, well, how would I do it then? Sure, just shutting them in a cage.
And it doesn't have to be a crate. I mean, another alternative would be if you've got a room that you can use that doesn't have anything they can jump on. So you don't want it to be, say, your living room with your sofas. It's somewhere
Or
with,
even a pen, like a
yeah, a
puppy
pen
pen,
would be
right?
perfect. Yeah. But it's just that safe space. And that's something that the lady with the bull mastiff has said it's made such a difference that she can just pop Tilda in her crate. She knows she can't do any damage. She can't get on the sofa. She can't play with her or the other dog in the home. She knows she is safe so that she can then pop out to the shops or whatever she needs to do,
Yeah.
and knows it's really not a problem. Where she said, if I left her at home, you know, she could get on the sofa and I'm not there. And she's got this major leg injury that's they've literally put a plate in her leg, so
My
she
God,
cannot risk any damage to it.
yeah.
It'll set back recovery.
Well, yeah, and this, because recovery is a tricky thing because, again, you know, drawing the comparison with the husband being broken at the moment. He had a fall at work, guys, and has fractured his wrist. And luckily, he's only got to wear a cast for 3 weeks.
Brilliant, yeah.
But that could have been surgery,
Yeah.
long kind of recovery period. And, you know, even when going back to sort of more routine things like spaying and neutering, depending on what type of operation you have with the females, because obviously the males, it's off they come and that's it
Yeah,
really.
yeah.
But with the girls, you know, it has advanced and it is more keyhole type surgery now, and you can sort of have the full hysterectomy type, or there are other types of spays now, but there is still a recovery period. And I remember that being really hard, not so much with the chihuahuas, but with Munchkin, because she was so active. It was like, she shouldn't be doing stairs, she shouldn't be doing this, she shouldn't be doing. It got to the point where I actually spoke to the vet and said, can I take off the painkillers?
Yeah, to make
Because
the, yeah, because
she
she thinks
doesn't
she
know
can.
there's anything wrong.
No.
Again, full breed as well. So
Yeah, yeah,
my
yeah.
mind's going, yeah, I'm fine. It's all right. Don't worry about it. My terrier was the same when he was neutered, you know, lost his nuts, bless him, and was trying to run around the next day. And I was like, no, you
Yeah.
bitches, dude. I would say most dogs, there is probably some point in their life where they're going to need to go into the vets or
Yes.
be rested
Yeah.
or.
Yeah. And I mean, if we exclude the vet side of it, I would say every dog will have a point in its life when it won't be able to be walked for whatever reason. I mean, even as they get older, a lot of dogs, especially if they're sports dogs, their brains are still quite active, but their bodies may be going, I can't do what we used to be able to do.
Yeah.
So you need to keep that brain going.
I mean, it's one of the reasons why I love Hoopers so much, because we do
Yeah.
have a lot of dogs that are retiring from other sports that come over to Hoopers because it's low impact and they can still be doing it, especially now with the baseless hoop design. You know, they're literally on the floor surface, not even having to step over a small bar on the floor whilst navigating a little course. You know, it's I
Brilliant.
love watching the elder dogs doing a bit of hoop.
Yes,
Lovely
yeah.
watching them do their little thing. They pot around, and some of them do pot around and are a bit slower and a bit crook, but you can tell they're having fun still
Yes.
and
Yeah.
they're
And
still
a
getting
lot of time it's
enjoyment.
keeping that relationship going with the owner.
Right.
I mean, one of my big dog sports is scent work. And again, it's something that I talk about in the book as a kind of a new hobby if you've got a dog that's maybe can't go back to what it was originally wanting to do. So you may have an agility dog that all of a sudden has got injury, and the vet turns around and says, your dog can't do agility anymore. Whereas scent work is something that actually you could still do with them. It's got that mental element to it. It's that bonding process of working with your dog. You can go down the competition route, but you can equally do it. You don't need a particularly fit dog to be able to do it. Any dog can do it.
Ascent work for me is one, you know, all of my dogs have done it. All of my dogs have been trained on ascent. Actually, all of my dogs got trained on different scents as well, so
Oh,
that
yes.
I did want to, you know, if I'd accidentally forgotten someone to pick one up, I wasn't going to then take the next dog out. And they go, well, there's one here and there's one here. So which one do you want me to find? We're all trained on different
Oh,
scents.
brilliant. Yes.
That was consciously because also it's just cool to be able to have a bit of contamination sometimes in a search area from
Definitely.
other smells.
Yeah.
But again, with the scent work, it's something that you can do with limited kind of movement needed, isn't it? Like you can work on your indications, you can work.
Definitely. Yeah. And it's something that you can start, I think, with a dog at home lying down, do it with two or three pots inside of, in front of them, and there's no movement needed at
Yeah, they
all.
just need to move their
Yeah.
nose around or whatever. Yeah.
And you can do it at different heights to suit an older dog, so they haven't got to do the bending.
Yeah.
And again, it's something. So I had one dog that I did some work with. He was a little spaniel, and she was an agility dog. And then she was suffering with PRA. So the retina in the back of her eye was going. So
Okay.
that slowly ruled out agility. So we got her in doing scent work, and her and her own, it was brilliant for them. So, she couldn't see a lot, this dog, but she could smell.
Probably her smell became, she became even more responsive to her sense of smell because her vision was impaired. Oh, bless them.
And it was lovely to see, because the owner literally came to me, said, I'm feeling a bit lost. My dog wants to do something. There's nothing wrong with her, but her vision is going, and we can't do agility together anymore.
Yeah.
And it really helped rebuild that bond and get them doing something. And I think they went on and did competitions and things. And it was
Oh,
brilliant.
brilliant. Excellent.
Whereas previously they may well have had to just give up on sport altogether. And
Yeah.
that's what they liked doing, and it kept that dog's brain going.
Yeah, I think as going back to sort of because Munch was always the one that got injured, bless her. She was like, she was always the one. Do you know what I mean? If one, and it was always a poor injury. Like, I think we probably had four or five, like, needed stitches, poor injuries with
Yes,
my
yep.
dog, right? And it was always like, but again, you know, she used to run through stuff, and it could just be there was a bit of glass or like a flint,
Yep.
something like that. You know, it was always very clean cuts. There was never
Yes, yeah.
horrible, thankfully. But I can remember her, like, obviously we couldn't walk her, and it was wet as well. So you had to put a blooming
Oh, the plastic
dressing
bag over
over.
it.
Yeah, like a drip bag, or we got those little paws rubber boots in the end just to let her out in the garden. But then I had this fit, drivey dog that felt absolutely fine. Just had this stupid thing on her foot and she wanted to do. So with her, it was also because you couldn't do too much stuff in stand or moving because she wasn't meant to be weight bearing because
No.
we get too injured. So it was like, what can we do? So I'm not gonna lie, her paw targeting was on point.
Brilliant.
Also, I did a lot of nose and head stuff with her, teaching
Yep,
her how
yep.
to look left and look right
Right.
and look up
Brilliant.
and look down, because it was just trying to think, what can I do with this dog in a sit position
Yes.
that's gonna get her brain working, but is not gonna be impeding the recovery of the injury.
No.
And it's tricky, isn't it?
It is. But it's also, a big thing for me, obviously, you're probably the same being a trainer, is the fact that it's not necessarily the function of the behavior. So a lot of pet dog owners come and go, I'm going to teach my dog to lie down because I want them to lie down. Whereas you need to think of it, especially when you've got a dog on rest, going, what can I teach my dog? It may be completely useless and I'm never going to use it again, but it gets their brain going, and it's something we can work on together, and it's something they've got to think about. And that's the purpose of the training, rather than the fact that you want them to be able to look left and right, for example. It's just getting them brain going. It's a bit like doing a crossword or a puzzle for us.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, we throw away the crossword. It doesn't matter once you've achieved it. It's just getting the brain going, and that's so important for these dogs.
Yeah, that's a really good analogy actually, because yeah, once you've done a puzzle, you're like, oh yeah, I've done that next one.
Done that, yeah.
But yeah.
But you enjoyed it at the time, and that's what training should be for these dogs.
No, definitely. So obviously, dogs being taught about crate training, dogs being able to cope with a disruption to routine is probably a good way
Yes,
of explaining
definitely.
that. Muzzle training, 20,000 billion percent, all dogs
Yeah.
should know this skill because, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, muzzle, in some circumstances, a muzzle could be used instead of a cone.
Yeah.
Because if the muzzle, if the cone's there to stop them kind of chewing on a bandage or a
To be
wound.
honest, Dodge is so conditioned to a muzzle, I'd be more inclined to just stick his muzzle on him if
Yes.
needed than him wearing a cone.
Yeah,
And I think he'd
definitely.
actually be less bothered by the muzzle being on his face than the cone. So,
Yeah.
yeah. And again, if your dog needs to be left unsupervised, then you need to consult your vet. And I wouldn't necessarily leave a dog with a muzzle on unsupervised.
No.
Yes, they can get them off.
Yeah.
But when you're around, like I remember, Tizer was the other one that always ended up wearing bloody cones because of ridiculous things. My little terrier I had. And because he was very low to, so he was a Jack Russell Parsons mix, very low to the ground. And the size of cone you had to make it working was quite big. Same
Yeah.
Munch probably had the same size cone as that Mastiff had because if you gave her the size that was correct, she could still get her feet. She
Yeah.
had to have this ginormous cone on to stop her being able to pull the bandages off. But Tyson used to use it as a scoop.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Go out in the garden and it would just be full of mud and twigs. And so
Yeah.
he'd be like, sir, this. Like his nickname for a little while became Digger Digger because that's what it was like. He looked like a little like digger machine excavating the bloody garden with his cone
Yeah.
on. Like he clearly wasn't bothered by the cone, you know. He,
No,
oh,
no.
that's fine. And actually, you could say to him, cone on, and he'd put his head through it because
Brilliant,
he had
brilliant.
so many little things where he'd had to wear a cone for various reasons. Again, probably poor injuries was a big one with my guys. Sounds like I just walk my dogs in really hazardous places, but like, you know, woodland, yeah, woodland. It happens.
I think it's just a hazard of having active dogs,
Yeah.
because they're always on the go all the time. So,
Yeah, because the Chihuahuas never did anything so ridiculous.
no.
Lot more self. So the Bull breed and the Terrier, injuries. Chihuahuas, no.
No.
Fine.
Yeah.
I mean, bless her, Chica did have to wear the cone when she'd had chin surgery. So
Oh, yes.
that was when she had a mass removed from her chin. So that was to protect that and her. And it also meant we could keep that clean, whereas
Yeah.
keeping the whole house clean with her resting on it was a lot harder. For people that are going to be listening that might be thinking, oh, I don't want to do it. Why should they?
Because it reduces the stress for your dog massively being prepared. I mean, that is the big thing. So, I mean, my dogs, I get the cone out, especially my Dalmatian. He wags his tail, he pushes his head in it, and he goes, "What are we doing today then?" And it's just almost, although you've got to be careful because I don't want him to get overexcited when he wears the cone, because I don't want that overexcitement emotion built into
You
the
don't want
training.
him thinking that the cone means we're playing really cool tuggy
No.
games or something, because
So you've got that side of it as well. But he does, he's quite happy wearing it. So it's not a problem.
yeah, but if you say we're gonna go right, we're gonna do 5 minutes settle training on the mat or on the bed or whatever, actually popping the cone on before you do that just adds that extra layer of
Definitely.
you put on the cone, you go and relax.
Yeah, and it
Doing
just becomes quite
fetching.
normal.
I'm like, hang on a minute. Could we train the cone as like the off switch? For anybody,
Almost.
I have lots of work. I have work breeds, so I'm
Yeah.
like, could we train that? That if they're really doing your head in, you just put a cone on and they
Put a
go,
cone on them and they settle down. Perfect. Yeah.
oh, you got me thinking now, Laura.
Yeah, that would work quite well.
Like, have I just discovered the way of how to install an off switch into a working?
Perfect.
I
Yes.
mean,
Yeah.
I can't see anything unethical about it.
Well, no, and you want your dog to get used to the fact that we just chill out in a cone.
Yeah, it's not a bad plan. It's not the worst plan we've had. I'm thinking actually, yeah, Dodge's had them put on him. I know he has. I was like, oh, have I ever trained Dodge where I can? I'm sure when I found that when we've been moving stuff and you're like, oh, there's cone here, dog, put this on, have some cookies. Okay, have it off, cool. Even just little sessions like that of just
Definitely.
popping the cone on, they get cookies, then you take the cone off again.
But I mean, also, I tend to do it as a bit of a shaping game when I'm introducing equipment. So I
Yeah.
tend to just start off with the cone on the floor. The dog just gets used to sniffing it, investigating it. We reward all of that. And even then, to start off with, I'll just hold the cone up. And if they stick their head in it the wrong way around, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's just interacting with it. And again, it's a different game that you can play in the sofa on in the evening from the comfort of the sofa.
Yeah, of course. I'm thinking actually, but then it would make sense that Dodge would just shove his head through it because he'd done loads of muzzle training at that point. So he's
So
like,
he's
oh
quite
yeah,
happy with anything
he's
new.
like, oh, this is my whole head, not just my nose. Okay, cool.
I mean, another one I do quite a lot of work with is ramps for big dogs. And I think that's a really important one.
Yes.
Because if you've got
Yes.
a large breed, and especially as I mean, they're all going to get old, hopefully. And when a dog gets old, they may not be able to jump into the car. So if you start ramp training from as early as you possibly can, it
Yeah.
helps if your dog is injured. But equally, when they get older, you can just put your ramp up and they'll quite happily go up it. If you've got little steps into your house that you need to get them over, if they were injured or elderly.
Yeah.
And again, a ramp is something that I get all my lot to walk up and down.
Yeah, Dodge has done that when, well, when he first had his HD diagnosis, I went into kind of overdrive of what might we need to do. You know, he's not having surgery, he's not a candidate for it, but he knows how to use a ramp. But also the way my van is, his crate is at the side door and there is a slight step. So he goes up a little bit and then into his crate.
Brilliant.
He doesn't just have to jump straight into the crate.
No.
And actually he does use the step.
Brilliant.
He does go up in stages rather than just in. So, yeah. And that's, I think, people underestimate as well how much effort it can be for the dogs to get. Like Minx goes over and puts her feet up and goes, okay, pick me up now. Because she used to jump in the van, but as she's got older, she now goes, okay, pick me up. Which is cool, you know, and she's actually got a little step that gets her up to the sofa now.
Brilliant.
Because, and Chica, bless her heart, is still called the Chica step because that was Chica's step to get on the sofa because she needed that little bit in between because they're so little.
They are, yes.
It helped them out. Whereas, yeah, Dodge knows how to use ramps and steps because, again, it was a case of, well, if when the hips do get bad, might need a ramp, so it's
Definitely.
worth training it as a fun exercise rather than again all of a sudden this new thing comes out,
Definitely.
especially with the older dogs as well. You know, if the first time a dog ever sees a ramp is when they're 11 years old and they're feeling uncomfortable because arthritis is kicking in.
Yes, it's then suddenly very stressful for them. Whereas if you've got a ramp and it's just another training game that you sometimes get out.
Do you know what? I'm going to go out on a limb and say anyone that has a dog over about 15 kilos,
Should use a ramp, yeah.
well, that's
And
just for your own back.
that's something I do. I mean, again, when I do kind of a pre-consult with somebody, so if somebody comes to me and says, I've got a dog having an operation in a month's time, we go through and say, like, how are you going to get that dog in the car when you pick it up from the vets after the operation?
Yeah.
And that was something we really had to consider with the Bull Mastiff I'm working on, because there's no way you can just pick her up and pop her in.
Well, and also she's going to be a bit woozy as well, so that adds to it because they're like still. I mean, you know, anyone that's had an operation that's come around from anaesthetic knows that you don't really remember the coming home bit
No.
because you're still a bit
Yeah,
hello
definitely.
fairies, right? So yeah, ramps is another really good point, and
Another,
I do think it is any dog that's going to be a bit bigger or. If you're an owner that maybe has a bad back, or and even teaching little dogs how to use ramps, because if that saves you from having to bend over and pick your dog up, you
definitely.
know, I mean, when I talk about picking a dog up, she's 5 kilos, so
Yeah,
it's
it's not a problem.
doable, but I mean, Munchkin was like 20, so sort of she ranged between 20 and 23 kilos. Could I pick her up in an emergency? Yes. Would I want to be picking her up every single day? No.
No. And also, don't forget, depending on what operation was needed, sometimes, as I say, like with Tilda, you have to be careful. You can't touch her back leg where she's had the operation. If it's a spay wound, it's in the, it's, you know, it's the stomach area that you've got to be careful with. So sometimes you can't just manhandle them.
Yeah,
depending on what happens.
The thing is as well, some dogs really, you know, like, obviously I can't pick Dodge up anyway. My husband can. But Dodge was never a massive fan of being picked up and held.
No.
Whereas, like, my best friend's Mally literally will be in my arms, like, giving me all the cuddles and love.
Yeah.
Baby angel. Minx, you can pick up a certain way. But if you went to put Minx on her back, I mean, no. And that's been a no since she was 3 weeks old.
Yeah.
But it's also thinking, because generally speaking, you would scoop the dog front and back legs and support their weight between your arms. But if they've had a leg operation,
you can't do that.
Then your abdomen and front end with the back legs dangling.
Yeah.
That's not always easy. If they've just had a spay, you can't pick them up that way because you're going to touch the stitches. So, yeah, actually, just teaching them how to use a ramp to get in that vehicle. And actually, with larger breed puppies.
Yeah,
because
definitely.
We don't want them
jumping
in and out of the van. Yeah. So if they have a ramp.
Yeah. And again, all the stuff that I do is brilliant for puppies. So all those owners that are going, I can't over-exercise my dog, but they're driving me crazy.
Mm-hmm.
All the stuff in the vet says rest is perfect for pups, because it's tiring out the brain.
Well, there we go, guys. Those of you that are joining me in puppyhood this year, it's another reason. Because the thing is, as well, going through those exercises, you're not only are you going to be prepping your puppy for future misdemeanors. That word, because they are at some point, something is going to happen, you know, things happen. But also, if you're doing that training really young, they're like, oh, it's this game. And it is a game, isn't it? It's something fun you're doing with the dog, and it's not stressful. Whereas when you wait until it's too late,
it's
not fun. It's not great. And it does add that extra level of stress.
It does. Yeah. And I mean, the other thing that we probably should talk about is that enrichment is not just about using food.
Oh, yes. Good one. Because, first of all, generally, a lot of the enrichment stuff does involve food.
Yeah, but there's a lot that doesn't. And also, if you've got a dog on rest that's not exercising as much, you don't want to give them loads of extra food on top. If they've got 12-week crate rest,
they're going to end up a little fatty boomba.
They are, yes.
And the thing is also, if they've had surgery, especially, again, going back to the example of the mastiff, the last thing that owner wants is that dog putting weight on when she's got leg injury. Because there's a reason why Dodge is kept lean, you know, because I know the joints are a bit crook.
Yeah.
She's not allowed to be fat.
No.
I wouldn't want that anyway, but do you know what I mean? So
I do, yeah.
So what, because, a lot of the kind of general enrichment ideas that people think of do involve food, which with puppies is cool because they're growing. They can have some extra calories. It's okay. What are your kind of top sort of enrichment ideas when we're not just using cookies?
Well, a big section of the book is all about bringing the outside in and using your dog's five senses. So literally you think of things, what can my dog hear? What can I give them to see? What can I give them touch? So if you've got a dog on a cone, a bit of just kind of, again, if the dog's happy, grooming and brushing can really help if they've got any aches and itches that they can't get to because they've got this cone on.
Giving
them different textures to lie down on can be really good for some dogs. Giving them different things, if they are able to move around, putting different things they can walk on. So it's just different textures. Scent obviously is really important. So what I'll do a lot of is if I'm going to visit someone, I might take some pet bedding from my daughter's gerbil.
Nice.
Or I'd rub a towel on a couple of my dogs, or take some fur, or take a bed or a toy or something that smells completely different to enrich the environment for the dog, which
Yeah.
I can take to them. And I say a big element.
Almost just like a little scent bar, if you like.
But I'd say you can almost do it with all of the dog's five senses,
Yeah.
and almost just think of each one individually. I mean, sound can be good for some dogs. Some dogs love different sounds, different types of music, kind of cartoon noises. Some
Yeah.
dogs will watch a television. There is doggy television on YouTube.
Yep. And also there is like the calming music for dogs that it's piano music, which actually I don't dislike if I'm working, because it's just sort of on in the background and
Definitely.
doing the thing that it does. But it's kind of because the thing is, putting things on like the radio and stuff, like you get all the adverts, but also like depends if you've gone for Classic FM. Like it could be a very lovely melodious piece, or it could be some great big concerto that you're like, oh my God, this is not relaxing.
But also, I mean, for some dogs, obviously, depending on sound sensitivities and things, is in the old days, we used to have the Sounds for Life CDs. And it's literally got loads of outdoor noises on it. And it just is something else to bring the outside in for the dogs. Obviously, you wouldn't do it if they were scared or they were going to get overexcited. But I mean, I'm not sure nowadays you have apps and things for the puppies to get
Oh,
used to
of
different
course, there's
noises.
an app for it. There's an app for bloody everything now.
But even just look on YouTube. Look at YouTube and find all sorts of different noises and things that you can bring in
Yeah,
that
different animal
noises.
noises. Like, yeah, there's so many different things, because I think we do sometimes fixate on scent with dogs, don't we? Just because their superpower. We're like, well, they're so good at smelling, let's just do all the smelling things. But I do wonder if sometimes that can get a bit too much. You know, like I'm sure most of the listeners will understand, like there are times where you really want to go out and be social and do the stuff, and there's other times where just no, people, please, thanks. Like
Definitely.
there's a reason we like dogs, right? And I do wonder sometimes, like when we're trying to do enrichment stuff, because a lot of the time we do use food and things, whether it can kind of be overwhelming for the dog, especially if they're not feeling 100%, you know,
Definitely.
especially post-op, you know, generally after, even just after anaesthetic. And I noticed it with Munch and Chica before we said goodbye to them. When they did have the anaesthetics, it took them 3 4 days to actually get over the anaesthetic. Whereas with, you know, Dodge, when he had minor surgery last year, the next day he was like up and cool and everything was fine. Because obviously he's a bigger dog, but also he's younger, fitter, metabolized it. Whereas little 12, 13-year-old Chihuahua was like, oh, that was a bit rough.
Definitely. But I mean, that's why sometimes it's almost also giving the dog kind of different choices. So if you were in a room, I mean, I know, for example, with my two at the moment, my spaniel and my Dalmatian will always go for a comfy bed. Whereas the spaniel often actually loves lying on just a hard floor.
A shepherd on a hard floor next to me right now.
I mean,
There's
my spaniel's
not
got a
a 12
book.
beds there now. I'm glad I spent all those money on those 12 beds that are lovely for him to, you know, because of his hips, because he needs all the beds for his hips. His head is on the rug and his back end's on the
But
bleh.
it's just, but it's just enriching the, but then he's making that choice that that's where he wants to lie. That's where he's comfortable.
Right. I'm sure he does it just to fuck with me, I'm not gonna lie. But you know, you spent all that money on those really fancy beds. Yeah, I want to lay on them.
I don't know, love that.
But yeah, so sorry, you were saying, so your spaniel will pick harder surfaces, your Dali will pick
Like,
softer surfaces.
softer surfaces,
Same divide in my house, yep.
But it's giving the dogs that choice, especially after, you know, if they're on rest, you know, if it is an operation or if it's just everyday rest. I mean, the way I kind of describe generally the bringing the outside in bit to owners, it's a bit like going on a journey. So you could either spend the day sitting in your house and you get bored, silly cabin fever, or you can sit in a car and you're just sitting still, you're not doing anything physical, but it can feel exhausting going on a journey because you're looking at things, you'll see, you know, you can stuff going on around you.
I guess that's the other thing, isn't it? Is making sure that you know the dogs are getting mentally stimulated, but in a way that's still calm and like positive, not
Definitely.
getting all silly and hyper and
No,
excited.
no, no, we don't want them doing that.
And this is the other thing with sometimes with training when they're injured, is that I mean, I confession. Worst dog trainer ever, never have a clicker on me. But I know if when Munch was rested, if I tried to clicker train her, she would have just have been like off the walls because clicker training was the most fun ever.
And that's where
Whereas
building
if
that
I just did
emotion.
some kind of like more sort of mat training stuff, very calm, very chilled, it was different. But I had to be mindful. I've never done settle training or anything with any of my dogs using a clicker because I find the clicker adds arousal.
Definitely. Yeah, no, I'm the same. Exactly the same.
I'm sure there's trainers listening going, that's poppycock. You should always use a clicker. Okay, that's cool. But for me personally, I've always got my mouth, voice, right?
I'm exactly the same. I have different marker words that mean different things.
I mean, I think the other thing that would be quite good to touch on because you said car journeys. I was like, oh, so you've got a dog that maybe can't do so much. And I'm thinking of, again, you have the two extremes. You have the young puppies that need to be a bit mindful of what they're doing, but also the elder dogs that just don't need to be walking all the way now. A little car journey's not a bad idea, is it?
Well, no, it's a great idea. Take them out. I mean, again, one of my clients, when I used to live down in Kent, she used to just pop her dog in the boot of the car and go and sit with her dog on the boot, and just watch people go by on the beach.
Nice.
Didn't even get out the car,
Yeah, a
but the
little bit
boot
of
lid
people
was
watching.
open, smells, people would come and say hello. A brilliant exercise for the dog.
The other thing as well, which interests in your opinion, is like the buggies and the carriages.
Again, if the dog's not getting excited, it's a great way of getting them out to experience the world, as long as they're quite happy with it,
Yeah.
without having all the extra exercise. So,
Yeah,
no,
I
they're
think that
great.
the advantage of having teeny tiny dog, I have just got her a little, I got it when I was over in the States, a proper carrier that's like a rucksack. So I can put it on me like a rucksack. So it means if we go for longer walks, she can still come with us. She just gets carried everywhere, like Her Royal Highness. But also, it will probably get used for the puppy a little bit at the start because the puppies, I'm not going to want the puppy to be going everywhere, but also, vaccinations or that kind of thing, you know, you are being mindful where they're going, who they're interacting with, all of that stuff. So it's, there are options. And it's funny because we've got quite a nice area that I go for a walk, Paynes Hill near us. It's dogs on lead, which is great, but it's cool because Dodge can go because all dogs are on lead. So
Brilliant.
solves that problem. But with Minx, I can pop her in a buggy. And we go around and she gets out for a bit and walks a bit and then she gets back in the buggy and does the buggy for a bit. And it's more of a family day out, you know, rather than just being, oh no, we have to leave the older one at home.
But I mean, well, funny story about those rucksacks. We've got two chihuahuas here as well. And my daughter's got one. And she's got one of those rucksacks for him. I mean, he's only six, I think he is now. But again, they can't walk as far as a Dalmatian and a Spaniel.
No. They have tiny
They
legs.
do. And he loves his rucksack. We actually call it his man cave. And quite often, if you
I
can't
love
find
it.
Dexter, it'll be like, where's Dexter gone? Oh, he's in his man cave. But it's so useful
Brilliant.
because you can take it out and about with you, just stick it on your back as a rucksack. If you want to sit and have coffee or somewhere, and Dexter can just go in his man cave. And it's his, it's like his little crate, his little space. And he loves
Yeah.
it.
And also it means that if he's like had enough of the humans, he can just get in his little. I love that man cave. That's brilliant. He goes, he's like, oh God, these blooming women. Off to his man cave he
Back
goes.
off his man cave,
Job
yeah.
done. Excellent. I love that. Because again, I think that people sometimes think it's a bit silly. And sometimes we get, especially children, Mum, look at that dog in that pushchair. Mum, look at that dog in that buggy. And I'm like, it's because she's old, she can't walk so far anymore. And you see the parents kind of go, oh.
Yeah.
Because obviously, and you know, as a chihuahua parent,
Yeah.
get the eye roll first.
Yeah.
You have to get the eye roll first. They
Oh
have to
yeah.
smile first, like looking at you, like really can you? And it's like, no, actually, she's old and she can't keep up now. So
Yeah.
she has a buggy.
Definitely. But as I say, it means that she's got all that enrichment going on. She's got all those five senses are going, even if she's not moving her body.
Yeah, and she definitely, the taste sense is definitely going because obviously she has to have travel cookies
Oh
because,
yes, yeah.
you know. Honestly, I don't know how her waistline stays how it does, the amount of snacky snacks this chihuahua. She's just spoiled now. She's old. She's 12. She turned
Oh
12 in
yes.
January. So now she's just spoiled. Like, sleeps on, she's like, is allowed up on the bed. Like, so normally she sleeps in a crate. And the last few, I haven't been shutting her in the crate at night. And the last 3 mornings, it's got to about 6. And she's like, think I'd like a cuddle. She comes and demands to be put in the bed so she can go back to sleep. I'm like, right, we might have to start shutting the crate again because that's going to get a bit annoying, not going to lie.
No, I'm afraid both of my chihuahuas sleep under duvets. I was going to say one on my bed and one on my daughter's bed. But yeah, I mean, they love it. They get cold and
Are yours
yeah.
long heads or short heads?
Short hairs.
Ah, so mine's long haired, so she doesn't
Oh,
get.
yeah, no, mine are short.
Yeah, no,
Although,
the short heads get very chilly.
they do, yeah. Although one of them is actually cross Pomeranian,
Oh.
but she's still short haired, so.
Well, to be fair, chihuahuas all used to just be chihuahuas, and it was the kennel club that decided to put them in two groups. So, you know. So, Laura, if people want to kind of find out more. First of all, where can they get the book from? Because it sounds like pretty much every single dog human
Everybody, yes.
needs the book.
So the book is on Amazon, is the easiest place to get it.
Oh.
Everybody's got Amazon. So yeah, the vet says rest.
Have you got a website if people didn't want to support the big companies and wanted to support is there anywhere else you can get it?
There may be very soon somewhere else. I'm actually discussing it with somebody else at the moment, but
Well,
hopefully
let me
they can.
have details, and if there are, I will add them to the show notes if we have.
Okay, yeah, no, definitely.
So
Yeah.
that sounds very exciting and cool. And if you get the information before the episode is released, then do let me know because obviously we are recording in the past, future. I can never work out which way it is, but there's going to be about a month before this one comes out, so we've got a
Yeah,
while.
yeah. So now hopefully it will be sorted.
Sorry, Dodge has decided today he's going to get involved with every single podcast. And I have to keep explaining that if people can hear weird noises, it's not me, it's a large shepherd huffing down the microphone. Right.
Oh, but he's gorgeous.
He knows it. Don't tell
Yeah.
him, it doesn't help. He's literally on my lap, guys, trying to like, he's like, oh, who are you talking to now? Oh, hello. Okay, bye. She's
yeah.
gorgeous. I can leave now.
Yeah,
Honestly, this creature. So, what about if people are in, we'll say Scotland? I mean, that's like saying, what if people are in England? Where in Scotland are you and where's the training being done and stuff? Where are you setting up base?
well, I'd say we're kind of about 40 minutes from Aberdeen.
Okay.
Kind of Montrose is our nearest town. But most of the work I do it all online because if you have got a dog on rest, you don't necessarily want me coming to your house and your dog gets excited.
Of course. I feel like that was the most fucking obvious thing
It
that I've just missed, especially for someone that does online training as well. Like, yes, it would make perfect sense. If you have a dog on rest, you can contact Laura via the interweb.
Yeah, and I can discuss with it anywhere in the world. We can put together a plan. And equally, I mean, you know, I deal with it for all sorts of reasons. So it may well be you've got young children at home, so you can't walk your dog. Your children aren't very well. You've got a new baby. You've injured yourself. You've become ill, or you just want to introduce some rest days for your dog. So.
But I guess as well, yeah, because from the handler point of view, you know, a good friend of mine has just had knee surgery. So making adjustments to the routine before surgery happens is going to be much easier for
Definitely.
the dogs to cope with than just going, oh, by the way, I'm broken now.
Yeah. And it may well be that she can get a dog walker or a friend or family to do a few days a week, but there'll be a few days a week where the dogs can't be walked. But I can give you loads of kind of ideas for suggestions and exercises that you can she can do at home, that's whatever her limitations are. So, you know, I've got one lady I'm working with who's got broken arms, so we do stuff with one arm, and I've given her loads of stuff to do. So
Yeah,
yeah,
if
but,
they've had like leg surgery, then it might be that they have to be in a chair or.
I can deal with all of that, and that's where I kind of tailor it to the person and the dog, that whatever restrictions there are, it's not a problem.
I'm assuming also people that maybe have some physical difficulties, whether they use a chair or if there's a medical condition, they'd be able to contact you for ideas as well.
Definitely. Yeah. But I think it's bearing in mind, though, that I do it, we're trying to tire the dog out. We're not actually teaching the dog new for a purpose. So I don't tend to take clients that, you know, I need my dog to walk to heel. That's not
No,
my.
but yeah, then there are lots of dog trainers that know we all know how to teach it, but it is nice to have that. And the thing is as well, when you're talking about things like loosely walking, yes, you can do it online, but unless you live like a million miles away from all the people, it is better to have someone coaching you in
Definitely.
all of that. Whereas when
Definitely.
you're talking about the rest stuff and ideas of what people can do with the dog. If they're limited, or if the dog's limited, or even both are limited, because that can happen as well, then how do they get in contact with you?
So I've got my website, which is lauracartercanines.co.uk, or I'm on Facebook or Instagram, all with exactly the same, Laura Carter Canines.
Cool.
And as I say, you've got lots of post information on there.
Wicked.
What I normally do is people book a free call with me to start with. So we have a chat, no cost, and then we can discuss if you think I'm going to be suitable to help you.
Amazing, brilliant.
So I can kind of get to know your, you know, the reason why you can't walk your dog, and we can discuss if there's a plan. And then we put together a series of sessions. And go from there, really.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Okay, so I'll make sure that all the details are in the show notes, guys, so that if you want to find the link to the book or contact Laura via her website to get some help if you've got a dog that you know is due surgery, or you're just trying to prep, or if you've got a new puppy and you're thinking, actually, let's do some kind of prep stuff with the baby dogs. But no dog is too old to learn some of the prep stuff, guys. Let's just be very clear with this. This isn't just for the baby dogs. Like any dog at any age can learn new tricks. I hate that
Definitely.
phrase, old dogs, new trick. Like, no, old dogs can learn new tricks. It's like, it's fine. But also thinking about dogs getting older, some of the behaviors and some of the ideas in the book could be more age appropriate for dogs that are maybe slowing down a little bit and need
Definitely.
a bit less than.
But they still need to keep their brains active. And that's, I mean, I went through a phase of rescuing older dogs. And you need to keep their brains going.
Yeah.
It's so important. So many people go, oh, the dog's old, he just sleeps all day. But no, you need to keep the brains active. And
No,
also,
well,
if they.
you know, hence why Minx has the choice of do you want to come out today or do you want to rest today? Like, yeah.
And also, we want these older dogs moving around a little bit, not a lot, but a bit. You can't just leave them lying around all day, because that's when they get really, really stiff.
Yeah, and there's some nights, you know, where Minx just bounces upstairs on her own, and then there's other nights she goes, can someone carry me, please? Thanks. Like, I know, and it seems to be weather dependent with her as well. When it's very cold and damp. And I'm not going to lie, my shoulder aches and the shepherd's a bit grumpier as well. So anyone that knows when the weather gets cold and damp, you get a bit stiff and a bit really. Yeah, no, cool. Laura, thank you so much for joining me on this episode. We've got loads and loads of really good
No
information
problem
out
at
there. So
all.
thank you. And I hope you enjoyed your first podcast.
Yes, no, it was brilliant. Thank you. Really good. Thank
Oh,
you for having me on.
no, it was my pleasure. So, guys, until next time, as always, stay safe, be kind, wash your hands thoroughly, keep your dogs on lead around livestock, and don't let them lick toads. Take care, guys. Bye. Guys, I just wanted to ask you a real quick favor. If you could rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast, it's going to help other people find me and listen to what I'm doing here at Canine Hoopers World. We're now on all the socials. So we have the Instagram, we have the Facebook, and we are officially on the TikTok at Canine Hoopers World. And remember to check out our website, www.caninehoopersworld.com, where you can find out information on in-person courses, online courses, and if you're doing Hoopers with your dog, you can also join in with our online achievement awards. These are open to any person, any dog, anywhere in the world to come and test your skills and get yourself a cool ribbon.